Good morning. This is the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Bob Martin. We're here again reading from this week's Independent, dated Wednesday, June the 6th, 2018. We begin with the news section. That new time religion. Summit Church's J.D. Greer wants to make the Southern Baptist Convention into the future. Not everyone's into it. 20 years ago, Homestead Heights was a traditional red brick Baptist church located off of Duke Street in North Durham. Founded in the early 60s, the congregation had swelled and then waned. By the late 90s, only about 350 people were left. Observers would have been forgiven for assuming it had fallen victim to the decline in church attendance that was besetting the country. But today, it boasts 10,000 worshipers on Sundays and a new name, Summit Church. With campuses throughout the region, Summit is one of the largest, fastest-growing congregations in the country. Far from teetering on the edge of obsolescence, its pews are packed with enthusiastic young people. Some of that change came from smart strategizing by longtime church staff, but most of Summit's growth stems from the dynamicism of its pastor, J.D. Greer. Greer, now 45, has brought in new worshipers throughout a combination of characteristics that have proven professionals and millennials' theological orthodoxy paired with informality and openness, a commitment to service, and an unstinting focus on bringing the gospel to all corners of the earth. He's been a resounding success in the Triangle. Now Greer wants to take that formula national. This week, he'll seek election as president of the Southern Baptist Convention at the group's annual meeting in Dallas on June 12th to the 13th. Many Southern Baptists around the country say Greer represents the best of their denomination and is exactly what they need, particularly at a time that's been characterized by public fighting and scandal. That includes the recent dismissal of longtime leader Paige Patterson for his controversial comments about women. Patterson came under fire after reports surfaced that he advised one woman to return to her abusive husband and encouraged another who had been raped at the seminary where he was president not to report it to the police. But a small yet vocal minority is pushing back against Greer's candidacy, implying that he's too progressive to be a real Southern Baptist. A few months ago, a second candidate, much older, much more conventional, was nominated to run against Greer, turning this into one of the most pivotal Southern Baptist elections in years. It's a question of methodology, not theology. There are fundamental differences in how the two candidates structure their churches, reach their congregations, connect with their communities, and engage with the wider world. To some insiders, the future of the Southern Baptist Convention is at stake. Baptist presidents in the last 40 years have been cut from a very similar mold, says Jonathan Howe, who runs the podcast SBC This Week. J.D. would be the first pastor in a new era, a new type of Southern Baptist leader. Is salvation by faith alone? What about helping the poor and suffering? Is that a contradiction? It's Sunday morning at Summit's main campus in Briar Creek, and Greer is working his way through Matthew 25. But he's gone off on a tangent, hitting at the perennial argument over whether personal salvation or social justice is the key focus of Christianity. Clad in jeans, talking a mile a minute, and injecting a sermon with jokes and personal anecdotes, Greer comes across as an easygoing, eminently relatable regular guy, albeit one who knows the Bible and can easily dissect its finer points. Both sides are correct, Greer says. You demonstrate your faith by engaging in the works of God. In a way, that sums up Summit's focus, adhering closely to the traditional interpretation of the Bible's teachings, while simultaneously exhorting worshipers to get involved in their communities and in missions abroad. Summit has done that well. The church has established, or planted, in Christian parlance, more than 200 churches overseas and another 40 in the United States. Of the 46,000 churches that are a part of the Southern Baptist Convention, Summit has by far sent the most missionaries into the field. Greer and his staff also constantly exhort congregants to engage in local service work. The service holds an annual volunteer week. Serve RDU, and regularly partners with local schools and municipal social service agencies. But personal salvation and individuals' dedication to God are primary at Summit. Attendees say they like that Greer speaks directly from the Bible without adding his own views. Greer himself acknowledges it. "We have a lot of people who say they appreciate that the messages aren't really my opinion on things," he said. "I'm just trying to explain what the Bible says." The combination of passionate belief with passionate outreach was baked into Summit Church from the beginning. Back when it was Homestead Heights, the church had been floundering with a largely middle-aged congregation. It had lost its senior pastor, and attendees were questioning its direction. Senior staff members determined that the church needed to better serve the local community. And in 2001, they turned to the 28-year-old preacher running their college ministry and asked him to become their senior pastor. Greer, a native of Yadkinville, had just gotten his Ph.D. from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary in Wake Forest. He immediately set about restructuring the church in order to attract more people. That included the name change, as well as tangible efforts to make the place more welcoming to newcomers. He was quickly successful, and eventually Summit outgrew its building. Church officials opened a second location in 2007 when they failed to find a new site large enough for the burgeoning church, and the trend has continued. Becoming a multi-campus church wasn't necessarily intentional, but it allowed so much young congregants to worship in the communities where they live. The church's growth coincided with that of the Triangle, which saw hordes of newcomers throughout the early 2000s who lacked family in the area and were looking to build connections. Today, Summit has 8 physical locations, including sites in Chapel Hill, Meebon, downtown Durham, Apex, and Raleigh. The Briar Creek location also hosts a Spanish language service, and Summit has a men and women's prison ministry. The church is just starting construction on a North Raleigh facility that's reported to cost $20 million. It will be completed by the end of 2019. Summit's money isn't going to appearances. The Briar Creek location, for example, is functional, but it looks like the former warehouse that it is. The boxy, windowless sanctuary has a concrete floor, low ceiling, and simple chairs lined up in rows. But to its followers, that doesn't matter. It's not about how pretty the church is. "If I can hear a good message, that's what's important," says Nicole Johnson, a Briar Creek resident who attended Summit for over a decade. Pastor J.D. is charismatic and provides an understanding of the Bible through his sermons in a way that I have not seen at any other church. Johnson, a young mother, didn't grow up Southern Baptist, but she says the denomination doesn't matter to her, and it's not something Summit advertises about itself. She's in good company. Summit attracts thousands of college students, young professionals, and families, many of whom weren't raised Southern Baptist, evangelical, or even Christian. "I go to church to learn about God and to have a community who believes what I do," says Sophia Nurkaiser, a former atheist who describes herself as very liberal and a feminist. Greer wants to have the difficult conversations, and everyone I've met at Summon has been really open and eager to learn. That includes issues of racial diversity. Summon is largely white, but church staffers say they are working hard to bring other ethnicities into the church leadership and regularly talk about racial justice. And when Greer says, during a sermon, "When someone shows up in my community, regardless of how they get there, my responsibility is to love them," in reference to refugees and immigrants, the sanctuary spontaneously bursts into applause. But make no mistake, Summit isn't liberal, and Greer isn't a progressive. He studied under Paige Patterson at Southeastern, after all. He believes that the Bible is the unerring word of God and freely talks about evil. Summit hews very closely to the Baptist faith and message. The statement of conviction put out by the SBC: women pastors are not allowed. Homosexuality is considered a sin, and the leadership staunchly opposes abortion rights. Many of Summit's younger followers disagree with some of those beliefs, but still they return because there's something about Summit and Greer that transcends politics and speaks to them fundamentally. It's not the Christian rock band that opens a service, nor the colored lights and enliven the sanctuary. Millennials are said to be casual and anti-institutional, seeking meaning, authenticity, and a sense of community. Greer's approach is shooing appearances and formality, cutting through bureaucracy and unnecessary dogma to provide worshipers with a direct relationship to God, and allowing them to meaningfully connect with their community and the wider world, speaks to young people in a way that traditional Southern Baptist pastors don't and can't. And that's where the divide within the denomination comes from. The first thing to know about the Southern Baptist Convention is that it's huge. There are about 15 million Southern Baptists in the United States, and while the group is well known for its older conservative Bible thumpers, it includes a surprising number of younger people who live in cities and appreciate urban life, even as they strategize about Christian theology and how to best attract millennials. That is to say, there's a wide range of practices and positions within the SBC. So when a preacher in Texas puts forth a resolution asking that the convention reject various forms of social justice, as one did recently, he isn't speaking for the entire group. The second thing to know is that the group's history is deep and detailed. The denomination was formed in 1845 explicitly to support slavery, as other Baptists around the country condemned it. Today, Southern Baptists conversationally mention things like the Great Commission Resurgence Debate, that's a 2010 discussion about how to best support mission work, and the Battle for the Bible, a struggle by more conservative pastors to strengthen and redefine biblical authority. The outcome of that battle was the conservative resurgence, a return to fundamentalism and its principles, the kind that began in the 1980s. Patterson was one of the many architects of that movement, as were many of the SBC's other current leaders. That includes Ken Hemphill, the South Carolina pastor who's been nominated to oppose Greer at the upcoming convention in Dallas. A traditional Southern Baptist preacher who wants to strengthen the SBC's institution, including seminaries, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, and the cooperative program which governs giving from churches to the SBC, the 70-year-old Hemphill clearly represents the old guard. And he was clearly put out to oppose Greer. He was nominated by a group of people who worked for a long time to come up with a candidate, says Alan Bloom, the editor of the Cary-based Biblical Recorder, a news journal for the North Carolina Baptists. Obviously, there's a campaign against Greer. That's the way that it's playing out. That was a surprise to many observers. Greer had run for the SBC presidency in 2016, But after tying with the other candidate, Steve Gaines, Greer dropped out and Gaines became president. So it seemed Greer would be a shoo-in this time. But Greer is viewed with suspicion by many from the SBC's more traditional wing. Some leaders have questioned his theology, picked apart comments he's made, and implied that he's not one of us. On the stalwartly anti-Greer website, SBC Today, for example, he was blasted for saying that he thinks Muslims and Christians worship the same God. Representatives from SBC Today declined to comment on this story. Others, like the online Capstone Report, have questioned Greer's theology after he recently said that women should have more leadership roles within the SBC. The irony is that he's not liberal at all. Analysts across the board agree that Greer is completely aligned with fundamental Southern Baptist theology. He's a dressed-down conservative, says Curtis Freeman, a professor at Duke Divinity School. But the characteristics that have led to Greer's success with younger worshipers are exactly those that have attracted the suspicion of older pastors. The concept of having several church campuses is unusual, for example, and viewed with some distrust simply for that reason. Greer is also less institutional, encouraging Summit to do more on its own rather than working through the SBC. J.D. represents an entrepreneurial spirit. He's a risk-taker, says Freeman. I think if he becomes SBC president, you'll see a different kind of vision for how missions get done, more church-centered rather than denomination-centered. Greer is also largely explicitly political. It's unimaginable that he would engage in the divisiveness that's characterized conservative Christian political over the past few decades. We tried to teach that there ought to be a reservation and a hesitation if there is a group of people who, in the name of Jesus, are getting engaged in particular policies, Greer said. He did, however, speak out forcefully against any kind of abuse of women in response to Patterson's comments and recent ouster. That's all appealing to young Christians who have been disgusted by the hypocrisy that they see in the righteous right and by that seeming enthusiasm with which many of their fellow evangelicals have supported Donald Trump. But it makes many older pastors who still see themselves as fighting for the soul of America uncomfortable. Hemp Hill, for example, has been endorsed by Robert Jeffress, the Dallas preacher who has become a close associate of Trump's. Trevin Wax, a blogger for the Gospel Coalition, an organization of more modern evangelical churches, thinks that Greer represents some distant divides among Southern Baptists. Most significantly, he said, cosmopolitan Southern Baptists like Greer are interested in diversity for its own sake, including diversity in age. Meanwhile, conventionals like Hemp Hill want the truth whether or not that attracts younger worshipers, and that the traditional Southern Baptist style of preaching and running a church should persist. At heart, the question of who supports Greer and why is about how an aging denomination, one whose churches were once very similar, responds to change and modernization. J.D. Greer certainly represents a generational and something of a cultural shift, and there are all sorts of underlying fears and anxieties about what will that mean for the SBC and its future. If Greer loses, younger Southern Baptists might take it as a sign that they aren't really welcome in the SBC. Most observers think, however, that Greer will be victorious, aided perhaps by the Patterson scandal, and a sense that it's finally time for a passing of the baton. It would be a signal that the Southern Baptist Convention recognizes the need to be multi-generational and multi-ethnic, says Donald Atkin, president of the Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. I don't understand why anyone would be opposed. I would to God that more church would be like the Summit. The next news article is from the Soapboxer. Democracy and light rail dies in darkness. The General Assembly's backroom budget deal to own the libs. It's impossible to defend State Representative Mickey McEnroe's comparison of the legislature's budget process to rape for the same reason that it's impossible to defend comparing anything to rape. Nothing is rape except rape. Civil rights icon through the Durham Democrat may be Michelle screwed up and then compounded that screw up by refusing to apologize. But it's also impossible not to understand the frustration underlying that comment. What the General Assembly's Republicans did last week was emblematic of the kind of opaque, backroom, zero-sum politics that has given Congress its sub-base basement approval ratings. Following a massive teacher demonstration on May 16, and fearing that Democrats would force uncomfortable votes on things like improved teacher pay, school safety, and tax cuts for the rich, a handful of Republicans cobbled together the budget behind closed doors with input from special interests, but no elected Democrats, or even most Republicans, then rammed it through without allowing any amendments. It was a breathtaking effort, a front to Democratic norms, although perhaps nothing out of the ordinary for the Trump era. But it did allow Republicans a chance to seize the political high ground. Now they can run campaign ads this fall asking, while Democrats voted against raising teacher salaries, 6.5%, rather than having to defend votes against Democratic amendments to raise teacher pay higher than that, as Governor Cooper proposed, by eliminating tax breaks for the wealthy. And that's why people hate politics. But when sweeping policies are enacted behind closed doors without substantive debate, they can often lead to unintended consequences, or less charitably, intended consequences dressed up as accidents. Such was the case with a single sentence on page 179 of the 267-page budget, which, if not repealed, all but dooms the Durham Light Rail Transit project. The sentence, quote, "A light rail project is ineligible for scoring, prioritization, and state funding until a written agreement is provided, establishing that all non-state funding necessary to construct the project has been secured," end quote. It doesn't say as much, not explicitly. Rather, it says that the state won't fund its share of the project costs, as much as $247 million, though probably less, until the federal government kicks in its share, about $1.2 billion, or half the total project costs. The problem? By law, the feds can't pay up until local and state authorities have all of their funding secured. Effectively, this creates a catch-22 in which the state won't commit funds until the feds do, but the feds can't commit funds until the state does. And around we go. The Republicans claim this wasn't their plan. They just wanted to ensure that the state didn't dump money into a project that was going nowhere. But their budget process didn't offer an opportunity for amendments. Just a yes-no vote, so there was no chance to remove or alter this provision, or even to debate its implications. Now, before we go further, I should mention that I'm ambivalent about the DOLRT and skeptical of its ridership projections. But that aside, it's clear that the project has widespread local support. Every local official is fully behind it. And Durham and Orange counties have already spent about $148 million on it. And it's also clear that the GOP's motives aren't really about fiscal responsibility. Never mind the fact that the budget is loaded with pork, including handouts to anti-abortion groups, a Christian hunting club, a proselytizing prison ministry, and a YMCA in Onslow County. Focus on the stunningly obvious point that there are a myriad other ways for the state to ensure it's not throwing good money after bad without strangling the project in its cradle. The legislature could, for instance, simply say the state won't distribute funds without a federal commitment, instead of saying it won't even evaluate the project without it. And it's important to note that commuter rail projects in Wake and Mecklenburg counties weren't targeted, though, according to the state representative Barry Ensco, an Orange County Democrat, they originally were. However, she told the Herald Sun, Republicans pulled that provision to protect vulnerable Wake and Mecklenburg Republicans in a tough election year. There are no Republicans representing Durham or Orange in the legislature, and that's not a coincidence. If Ensco is correct, and everything about the way Republicans have comported themselves since taking power suggests she is, then the motives here are obvious. With their supermajorities threatened in November, Republicans had in this budget one last chance to whack Durham and Orange progressives just for the hell of it. In my eyes, that's just what they did. They killed light rail because they could. Now local leaders are scrambling to get lawmakers to fix it. Durham County Commissioner Wendy Jacobs, a member of the Go Triangle Board of Directors, says high-level leaders in the General Assembly want to help via a technical correction, a way for legislatures to say that's what in the budget isn't what they actually meant. Of course, this last-ditch strategy assumed that the budget's language isn't, in fact, exactly what they meant. We'll turn now to the cover story for this week. The best of eat and drink in the Triangle. The results from a recent reader's poll. They asked people what they thought of different places, different types of things, and this is what they said. The best bagel in the Triangle? Monuts, 1002 9th Street in Durham. Best bakery in Durham County? Gummelhumpf Bakery, Cafe, and Restaurant, 2706 Durham Chapel Hill Boulevard in Durham. The best bakery in Orange and Chatham County, Gummelhumpf, at 1800 East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. The best bakery in Wake County, La Farm Bakery, 220 West Chatham Street, Cary. Best barbecue in Durham County, the original Q Shack, 2510 University Drive in Durham. Best barbecue in Orange, Chatham County, Allen and Son, Chapel Hill, 26203 Milrose Road in Chapel Hill. Best barbecue in Wake County, the Pet Authentic Barbecue, 328 West Davie Street in Raleigh. Best biscuits in Durham County, Rise Biscuits Donuts, Downtown Durham, at 401 Foster Street in Durham. The best biscuits in Orange and Chatham County, Sunrise Biscuit Kitchen, 1304 East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. The best biscuits in Wake County, Rise Biscuits and Donuts in Cameron Village, 530 Daniel Street, Raleigh. The best Bloody Mary in Durham County, Motorco Music Hall, Parts and Labor, at 723 Rigsby Avenue in Durham. Bless Bloody Mary in Orange and Chatham County, The Place Louisiana Cookery, 111 North Churton Street in Hillsboro. And the Bless Bloody Mary in Wake County, NOFO at The Pig, 2014 Fairview Road in Raleigh. The best bread in Durham County, Gummelhumpf, 2706 Durham Chapel Hill Boulevard in Durham. The best bread in Orange and Chatham County, Weaver Street Bakery, 101 East Weaver Street in Carrboro. The best bread in Wake County, La Farm, 4248 Northwest Cary Parkway in Cary. Best breakfast in Durham's County, Elmo's Diner, 776 9th Street in Durham. The best breakfast in Orange and Chatham County, Elmo's Diner at 200 North Greensboro Street in Carrboro. And the best breakfast in Wake County, Big Ed's City Market Restaurant, 220 Wolf Street in Raleigh. The best brewery in Durham County, Ponysaurus Brewing Company, 219 Hood Street in Durham. The best brewery in Orange Chatham County, Mystery Brewing Company, 437 Dimmicks Mill Road, number 41 in Hillsboro. Best brewery in Wake County, Trophy Brewing, 827 West Morgan Street in Raleigh. Best brunch in Durham County, Gugelhumpf Bakery, Cafe, and Restaurant, 2706 Chapel Hill Boulevard in Durham. Best brunch in Orange and Chatham County, Elmo's Diner, 2000 North Greensboro Street in Carrboro. Best brunch in Wake County, Irregardless Cafe and Catering at the Glenwood, 3300 Women's Club Drive in Raleigh. The best burger in Durham County, Bull City Burger and Brewery, 107 East Parish Street in Durham. Best burger in Orange Chatham County, Al's Burger Shack, 516 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. The best burger in Wake County, Chuck's Burgers, 237 South Wilmington Street in Raleigh. Best burrito in Durham County, Cosmic Cantina at 1920 Parrish Street in Durham. The best burrito in Orange and Chatham County, Car Burritos, 711 West Rosemary Street in Carrboro. Best burrito in Wake County, Gringo A Go-Go, 100 North Person Street in Raleigh. Best Caribbean or Cuban in the Triangle, Copa Old Havana, 310 East Main Street in Durham. Best Cheap Eats in Durham, Guascaca, Irwin Square at A100, 2200 West Main Street in Durham. Best Cheap Eats in Orange, Carburitos, 711 West Rosemary Street in Carrboro. And Best Cheap Eats in Wake County, Mammy Nora's, 2401 Wake Forest Road in Raleigh. Best Chef in Durham County, Matt Kelly. Best Chef in Orange, Familia Reagan. Best Chef in Wake County, Ashley Christensen. Best Chinese Restaurant in Durham, Happy China, 2505 Durham Chapel Hill Road in Durham. Best Chinese Restaurant in Orange Chatham County, Gourmet Kingdom, 201 East Main Street in Carrboro. Best Chinese Restaurant in Wake County, Brewery Vavana, 218 South Blount Street in Raleigh. Best Chocolate in the Triangle, Videri Chocolate Factory, 327 Davy Street in Raleigh. Best Coffee Shop in Durham County, Coco Cinnamon, 420 West Greer in Durham. Best Coffee Shop in Orange Chatham County, Cafe Driadi, 1215 East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. Best Coffee Shop in Wake County, Cup of Joe, Hillsborough Street, 3100 Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. Best Cupcakes in Durham County, Small Cakes Durham, 4711 Hope Valley Road in Durham. Best Cupcake in Orange Chatham County, Sugarland, 140 East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. Best Cupcake in Wake County, The Cupcake Shop, 104 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. The best deli in Durham County, Lucky's Delicatessen, 105 East Chapel Hill Street in Durham. Best deli in Orange, Chatham County, Mediterranean Deli, Bakery, and Catering, 410 West Franklin Street, Chapel Hill. Best deli in Wake County, The Village Deli, 500 Daniel Street in Raleigh. Best desserts in Durham County, The Parlor, 117 Market Street in Durham. Best desserts in Orange, Chatham County, Weaver Street Market, Carrboro, 101 East Weaver Street in Carrboro. Best desserts in Wake County, Hayes Barton Cafe, 2000 Fairview Road in Raleigh. Best distillery in the Triangle, Durham Distillery, 711 Washington Street in Durham. Best donut in the Triangle, Monuts, 102 9th Street in Durham. Best draft beer selection in Durham County, Beer Study, Starpoint Brewing, 2501 University Drive, number 4 in Durham. Best draft beer selection in Orange, Chatham County, The Beer Study, 106 North Graham Street, Chapel Hill. Best draft beer selection in Wake County, The Raleigh Beer Garden, 614 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. Best food truck in the Triangle, Chirba Chirba Dumplings. Best French restaurant in the Triangle, Vin Rouge, 2010 Hillsborough Road in Durham. Best fries in Durham County, Bull City Burger and Brewery, 107 East Perry Street in Durham. Best fries in Orange and Chatham County, Al's Burger Shack, 516 West Franklin Street, Chapel Hill. Best fries in Wake County, Chuck's Burgers, 237 South Wilmington Street in Raleigh. Best frozen treats in the Triangle, The Parlor, 117 Market Street in Durham. Best gluten-free friendly restaurant in the Triangle, Primal, 202 North Carolina Highway 54, Suite 107 in Durham. Best Greek restaurant in the Triangle, Mediterranean Deli, Bakery, and Catering, 410 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. Best guacamole in the Triangle, Gonza Taco and Tequila, 7713 Lead Mine Road, Suite 39 in Raleigh. Best hot dog in the Triangle, Snoopy's, 3600 Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. The best Indian restaurant in the Triangle, Vimala's Curry Blossom Cafe, 431 West Franklin Street, Suite 415 in Chapel Hill. Best Irish pub in the Triangle, Bull McCabe's Irish Pub, 427 West Main Street in Durham. Best Italian restaurant in Durham County, Gacciolina, 3314 Guest Road in Durham. Best Italian restaurant in Orange, Chatham County, 411 West Franklin Street, Chapel Hill. Best Italian restaurant in Wake County, Bella Monica, 3121 Edwards Mill Road in Raleigh. Best Japanese restaurant in Durham County, Dashi, 415 East Chapel Hill Street in Durham. Best Japanese restaurant in Orange, Chatham County, Akihana Japanese Restaurant, 206 West Main Street in Carrboro. The best Japanese restaurant in Wake County, Waraji Japanese Restaurant, 5910 Durley Road in Raleigh. Best kid-friendly restaurant in Durham County, Elmo's Diner, 776 9th Street in Durham. Best kid-friendly restaurant in Orange, Chatham County, Elmo's Diner at 200 North Greensboro Street in Carrboro. Best kid-friendly restaurant in Wake County, The Cowfish Sushi Burger Bar, 4208 Six Forks Road, Suite 100 in Raleigh. Best late night meal in Durham, Cosmic Cantina, 1920 Perry Street in Durham. Best late night meal in Orange, Chatham County, Time Out, 201 East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. Best late night meal in Wake County, The Players Retreat, 105 Oberlin Road in Raleigh. Best Latin American restaurant in Durham County, Luna Rotisserie in Empanadas, 112 West Main Street in Durham. Best Latin American restaurant in Orange County, Carburitos, 711 West Rosemary Street in Carrboro. Best Latin American restaurant in Wake County, Gonza Tacos and Tequila, 7713 Lead Mine Road, Suite 39 in Raleigh. Best locally made craft beer in the Triangle, Trophy Wife Session IPA, Trophy, 656 Maywood Avenue in Raleigh. Best locally made liquor in the Triangle, Conniption Gin at the Durham Distillery, 711 Washington Street in Durham. Best locally made wine, cider, or mead in the Triangle, Bull City Cider Works, 305 South Roxborough Street in Durham. Best Mediterranean restaurant in the Triangle, Neil Monde Baking Company, 10235 Chapel Hill Road, Suite 400 in Morrisville. Best Mexican restaurant in Durham County, Gonza Tacos and Tequila, 604 Fenway Avenue, Fernway in Durham. Best Mexican restaurant in Orange, Chatham County, Carburitos, 711 West Rosemary Street in Carrboro. Best Mexican restaurant in Wake County, Gonza Taco and Tequila at 7713 Lead Mine Road, Suite 39 in Raleigh. Best Middle Eastern restaurant in the Triangle, Neomanda Mediterranean, 3817 Burrow Road in Raleigh. Best New Restaurant in Durham County, St. James Seafood, 806 West Main Street in Durham. Best New Restaurant in Orange, Chatham County, Mystery Brewing Public House, 230 South Nash Street in Hillsborough. Best New Restaurant in Wake County, Brewery Bahana, 718 South Blount Street in Raleigh. Best Outdoor Dining in Durham County, Motoco Music Hall, Parts and Labor, 723 Rigsby Avenue in Durham. Best Outdoor Dining in Orange, Chatham County, Weaver Street Market, 101 East Weaver Street in Carrboro. Best Outdoor Dining in Wake County, the Taverna Agora Greek Kitchen and Bar at 326 Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. The Best Pie in Durham County, East Durham Bake Shop, 406 South Driver Street in Durham. The Best Pie in Orange, Chatham County, Weaver Street Market at 101 East Weaver Street in Carrboro. Best Pie in Wake County, Bittersweet, 16 East Martin Street in Raleigh. Best Pizza in Durham County, Pizzeria Toro, 105 East Chapel Hill Street, Durham. Best Pizza in Orange, Chatham County, Pizzeria Mercato, 408 West Weaver Street in Carrboro. Best Pizza in Wake County, Lily's Pizza, 813 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. Best place to get fresh pressed juice in the Triangle, Happy and Hale, 703B 9th Street in Durham. Best restaurant in the Triangle, Vita Mandaloyan Restaurant and Bar at 222 South Blount Street in Raleigh. Best salad in Durham County, Happy and Hale at 703B 9th Street in Durham. Best salad in Orange, Chatham County, Weaver Street Market, 101 East Weaver Street in Carrboro. Best salad in Wake County, Happy and Hale, 443 Fayetteville Street in Raleigh. Best sandwich in Durham County, Toast, 345 West Main Street in Durham. Best sandwich in Orange Chatham County, Merritt's Store and Gill, 109 South Columbia Street in Chapel Hill. Best sandwich in Wake County, Parkside Restaurant, 301 West Martin Street in Raleigh. Best seafood restaurant in the Triangle, Saltbox Seafood Joint, 608 North Magnum Street in Durham. Best Southeastern Asian cuisine, Beat Up Manda Laotian Restaurant and Bar at 222 South Blount Street in Raleigh. Best Southern food restaurant in the Triangle, Pools, 426 South McDowell Street in Raleigh. Best sports bar in Durham County, Tobacco Road Sports Cafe, 280 South Magnum Street, Suite 100, Durham. Best sports bar in Orange Chatham County, Wooden Nickel Pub, 105 North Churton Street in Hillsboro. Best sports bar in Wake County, The Players Retreat, 105 Oberlin Road in Raleigh. The best steak in Durham County, Nana Steak at 345 Blackwell Street in Durham. The best steak in Orange Chatham County, Bin 54, 1201 M Raleigh Road, Chapel Hill. Best steak in Wake County, Angus Barn, 9401 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. Best sushi in Durham County, M. Sushi, 311 Holland Street in Durham. Best sushi in Orange and Chatham County, Akaihana Japanese Restaurant, 206 West Main Street in Carrboro. The best sushi in Wake County, Waraji Japanese Restaurant, 5910 Durley Road in Raleigh. Best tapas in the Triangle, Matea Bar de Tapas, 109 West Chapel Hill Street in Durham. Best taqueria in the Triangle, Taqueria La Vaquita, 2700 Chapel Hill Road in Durham. Best vegan-friendly restaurant in Durham County, Luna Rotisserie and Empanadas, 112 West Main Street in Durham. Best vegan-friendly restaurant in Orange and Chatham County, Vimalia's Curry Blossom Cafe, 431 West Franklin Street, Suite 415 in Chapel Hill. Best vegan-friendly restaurant in Wake County, Fiction Kitchen, 428 South Dawson Street in Raleigh. Best vegan burger in Durham County, Bull City Burger and Brewery, 107 East Parish Street in Durham. Best veggie burger in Orange Chatham County, Spotted Dog Restaurant and Bar, 111 East Main Street in Carrboro. Best veggie burger in Wake County, Fiction Kitchen, 428 South Dawson Street, Raleigh. The best waitstaff in the Triangle, Brewery Bavana, 218 South Blount Street in Raleigh. The best wine list in Durham County, Bar Brunello, 117 East Main Street in Durham. The best wine list in Orange Chatham County, Glass Half Full, 106 South Greensboro Street in Carrboro. Best wine list in Wake County, Angus Barn, 9402 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. Best wings in Durham County, Heavenly Buffaloes, 1807 West Markham Avenue in Durham. Best wings in Orange and Chatham County, Wooden Nickel Pub, 105 North Churton in Hillsboro. And best wings in Wake County, the Linwood Grill, 4821 Grove Barton Road in Raleigh. And that's the end of the list of best food and drink in the Triangle for this year. If after all of that list, you're kind of wondering how did the Indy come up with those, here's the introduction that they made for it. They said, like that? Try this. Every year, we try to perfect the formula for our editorial companions to our reader's pick to our annual Best of the Triangle issue. In 2016, we made up our own categories to bring attention to things we wanted to talk about. But that seemed to confuse folks more than anything else. Last year, we wrote about a selection of our readers' choices, sometimes having a little fun with them. Some people thought this diminished our readers' picks, which wasn't our intention, although we stand by our statements that Frank Stesio is not a crank and Kerbero is not a neighborhood. So for 2018, here's a new theme for our staff picks. Like that? Try this. We wrote these blurbs before voting had wrapped when we just knew who the nominees were. In categories where we had strong feelings about something that wasn't nominated, we added our own editorial comments. The point isn't that readers got it all wrong, but the Triangle has got so many great things that they couldn't all possibly be nominated. And we just wanted to throw a few more wonderful things to explore into the mix. You notice that we skimped a bit in the health and body section. That is because, as journalists, we care little for either our health or our bodies, which means we have little insight to offer. Sorry, professional hazard. If you ask 100 people what the best whatever is, you'll probably get 100 different answers. And that's great. To each his own. Our job in this issue, both through the readers' picks and our own staff choices, is to highlight as much of that cool stuff as possible. So there it was. You've heard them. Now, go out and try something new. We now turn to the indie food section. Home plate. Without forsaking the classic hot dog, the Durham Bulls Athletic Park has quietly caught up with Durham's love of local food. The food you find at a sports stadium is almost iconic as the game itself. What would baseball be without peanuts and Cracker Jacks, hot dogs and plastic cups of frosty domestic beer? You can, of course, find those tried and true standbys at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. But since deliberately changing its food strategy a few years ago, the home of the Bulls has come to boast a local food lineup that even a major league ballpark might envy. Last season, Moe's Southwest Grill gave way to a second location for Gonza Tacos and Tequila. This season, local pizza slingers, pie pushers replaced Papa John's. The key to the ballpark's culinary success is Bull City Hospitality, which took over the food franchise starting with the Bulls' 2015 season. This was a year after the park reopened, with a multi-million dollar facelift, which the Bulls' parent company, the Capital Broadcasting Corporation, had taken as a chance to re-examine the park's hospitality side, too. Food and drinks have been the responsibility of Center Plate, which runs concessions for several large stadiums around the country. But when its CEO, Des Haug, was caught on video kicking a dog in the summer of 2014, it made the decision to hold an in-house hospitality operation even easier. The CBC launched Bull City Hospitality as a separate business entity from the Bulls, but one complementary to the stadium's operation. If the Bulls sat back and said, "Hey, we want to try this promotion, or we want to develop a relationship with this vendor," it wasn't like you were talking to someone else that had another boss and you had to sell them on it, says Dave Levy, Bull City Hospitality's Director of Food and Beverage. We talked about it as a team. Prior to Levy's arrival, there were a handful of Triangle-based vendors peddling their treats at the park, including Loco Pops and locally franchises of Chick-fil-A and Reader's Italian Ice. But now there are about a dozen local vendors, including Micas and Pinatas, Hot Dog Heaven Barbecue, and Fried Goodies from the Cupcake Fairy. The stadium's impressive local beer includes Raleigh's Linwood Brewing Concern, Wake Forest White Street Brewing Company, and Durham Beer, Durham Bull Bill Beer Company. Yet another company that falls under the CBA's drug-related enterprises. And even a stand to buy fresh fruit cups from the Durham Co-op Market. An unexpected hit. The amount of fruit we sell here, it's crazy, Levy said. Hundreds of dollars of fruit cups a night. They sell out most nights. Levy thinks bringing a variety of local vendors to the ballpark also helps the inside house concessions operations stay focused on keeping the basics great. A lot of times we sat back and said, let's make sure that, from the Bull City hospitality side, we're sticking to the core items that you would expect at a ballpark. Of course, one of those is hot dogs, which have been a subject to serious scrutiny, Levy says, that, in his experience, most people favor all beef hot dogs over the other varieties, but a blind taste of most than 20 Franks revealed that the two Meat Bright Lean brands from Carolina Packers remained the favorite at the Bulls headquarters. Carolina Packers is not necessarily famous for its all-beef hot dogs. They're famous for their red hot dog, Levy says of the famous regional oddity, whose ingredients, spoiler alert, are to those identical to his brown counterpart. The red hot dog has always been a two-meat hot dog, pork and beef. And, anyway, celebrated all-beef hot dog brands as Nathan's and Hebrew International don't have the right credentials for the ballpark menu. They're good hot dogs, but they're not from North Carolina, Levy said. If we can do something local, we'd rather do it local. If you want to take your ballpark hot experience to the next level, opt for Hog Heaven's Q Dog, which is topped with pulled pork, barbecue, and coleslaw. There are strong signs that Bulls fans prefer local fare. National pizza giant Papa John's still sponsors the Bulls, but there wasn't quite enough business at the Sun to justify staying gone. Well, that's about it for another week. This has been Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is designed for a blind and print-impaired audience. And a reminder that this program will be available as a podcast following its initial broadcast. So until next week, goodbye, good night, and good morning.